It's game week, Kevin Dunn. We got some football to talk about.
Thank
Everyone's fired up.
God, it's here, man.
It's here. It is here. So Texas is going to play a little football. I'm excited about it. I've got a little anticipation going. I'm going to have a little extra juice and pep in my step when I do my workout later today. There's actually a sunny, beautiful day outside in San Francisco. No fog. No nonsense. So I'm in a good mood, man. What about you?
I am too. It was a good weekend, kind of the last weekend, but was watching football. So watched Scott Frost and that whole debacle, and then UCLA and Hawaii. And those are games that you usually wouldn't watch maybe in week six or seven, but I was as fired up as I could be just because we have real football. And so it's here. Watched a lot of high school football over the weekend or on Thursday and Friday. And so, man, it's there's nothing like football. It just separates itself from every other sport, and it's here. So we got a starting quarterback too, man.
Yeah, we got a starting quarterback. Big shocker. But hey, I want to put a pin in the UCLA-Hawaii game and the Nebraska-Illinois game because I was not able to watch either. I do know what happened, and I want to talk a little bit about Scott Frost briefly. I'd love your opinion on it, but I've been swamped. I spent that day looking at different investments.
Okay.
What
investments?
You know me, I'm interested in a little asymmetrical investing, right? Not just the stock market. So I was looking at mobile home park investments and self-storage investments.
I've always said you're a mobile home type of guy.
I am a mobile home type of guy. You know, actually people have a trailer park concept of mobile homes, and that is some mobile homes, particularly a lot of the mom and pop operators who don't invest in the properties. But there's some syndicators, some operators who go out and they acquire mobile homes and they fix them up and they make them better places to live. They make them cleaner, safer. They kick out the criminals, the 5 or 10% that give the place a bad name, and they bring in families, and it's
nice.
Workforce housing, right?
Yeah.
And housing is getting increasingly difficult for people to afford, and it's a great last refuge for a lot of people. And then you've got these crazy communities. I don't know if you know about them, Kevin. There's a few in Texas, but certainly in Florida, it's 55 and over communities. And if you drove through these places, I mean, they have like bingo night and they have swimming pools and they have community HOAs. If you drove through these places, you'd swear that you were in like a nice brand new development. You wouldn't even know that they're manufactured homes.
Yeah, there are developments like that that are really nice. And then you've got nude night and all that fun stuff.
Yes, you nailed it. I have a sneaking suspicion that there's a lot of swinging going on in these communities.
I'm thinking so, man. Viagra, good to go. 55 and older, just let it roll.
There you go. Well, hey, I know that there's a guy that really knows investments cold, and he's forgotten more about the investment markets and how to manage capital than we have ever known. And frankly, more than most of our listeners have ever known, I'd argue probably all of them. That's a guy named David McClellan.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's just super sharp and was a multinational champion swimmer here at Texas, won a couple of those, and he's kind of taken that to his industry now, and he's seen every side of the industry. He's a fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial and really knows what he's doing. He can really help you out. He's helped out multiple listeners we've had. He's part of our family. So all you got to do is mention EGAT and you can get a free consultation. What happens with that consultation? He's going to help you find your financial freedom number, and that's it. Financial freedom number. How big is that? It really will, you know, change your life. He can do that. Build your wealth. Achieve financial freedom faster. It's well worth your time. Give him a call. Free consultation. And trust us. He can help you out. You're not going to regret it. And his resume just speaks for itself. Give him a call. It's 312-933-8823. 312-933-8823. You can email him. dmcclellan@formfin.com. We've gotten a really good response. We're big fans of his, and he's incredibly bright.
He's a very, very bright guy. And I just think, you know, let me bounce this off you, Kevin, because I have a theory that men, particularly women, are not as susceptible to this at all, but they have ego built up around certain things.
Yep.
And they believe that they have to be competent about sports. They have to be knowledgeable about sports. And if you don't know anything, then you kind of feel weird or embarrassed about it. They also feel like they need to understand like mechanical things or how to fix stuff. And if you're not, you kind of feel like lesser than if you've got the neighbor who's super handy and he's fixing his own washer and dryer. And then finally, I kind of feel like all men put up more about finance than they actually know.
No question.
Because as you start to dig in, you realize like they don't really know anything. And like, I don't know as much as I think I know. And when I talk to a guy like David McClellan, it's laid bare, but he does it in such a nice, a consultative way that it's really about educating you, grow your nest egg and grow your financial freedom, as you said. So I would just say, if you have an ego attached to this issue, swallow it and pick up the phone, because it's free. It costs you nothing. And the guy's really sharp. He can set you on the right path.
Yeah, he can also put it in layman's terms, which is huge. I mean, he's got the knowledge, and but then all of a sudden he can kind of see where you're at, what your understanding is, and be able to paint a picture of how you can grow your wealth. And that's always nice, where he's just not, he's not one of these IT guys who's writing code and then talks in code.
Yep, that's David McClellan, friend to this podcast, friend to me and Kevin Dunn, friend to you listeners, friend to Texas, friend to the human race.
Yes, sir. Good ending there. Friend to the human race. He is. He's an incredibly likable guy, and we're lucky and happy to have him as part of our family. And it's really a nice thing for y'all, too, because it's a free consultation. We think you're going to be impressed.
Let's talk about a guy who may soon get exercised from the Nebraska Cornhusker family. Scott Frost, what the hell happened in that game? Explain. I didn't see it.
It was sloppy stuff, missed receivers and missed assignments. And look, they ended up coming back in 30-22, I think was the final in that one. But look, Nebraska is one of those schools, obviously with the partial qualifiers or non-qualifiers, that really hurt that program when DeLoss and Texas, as the Big 12 was being conceived, said, nope, we're not doing that. No Lawrence Phillips here. And then it kind of pushed, he wouldn't admit it, but Tom Osborne then was done. He retires and I think headed to Congress. And Nebraska was always going to be one of those schools. There's no real recruiting base. And I always question what the future of that program is, because it is a blue blood, and they're obviously – there's a ton of history there, but Oklahoma kind of has this too. You got to have a recruiting base, and Nebraska has just not been able to, in the new world of college football, take that step. I'll say this, and maybe it's not lost forever, because you can, it's much easier to go recruit nationally now than it used to be, where kids used to, for the most part, stay pretty close to home. We've seen that. We've seen these kids from California go to Bama and Clemson and go across the country. But Frost was a guy that obviously at UCF, that's one of those jobs that we talk about, that like a Houston, like Cincinnati, Memphis, right, where you can win 10 games relatively easy there. And you don't really know just how good of a coach that person is. I thought Frost was a better coach than he has been, but it's just not working out there.
No, it's not. And I call those kingmaker programs.
They
because
are.
They have this built-in recruiting infrastructure of non-qualifiers or academic struggles or JUCO guys or second and third tier recruits who just haven't been developed, right? They were going to weak high school programs that didn't have a strength and conditioning coach. And, you know, the anti-Westlakes, right?
Right.
And these kids just haven't been developed. And you get them into the University of Houston, you get them to Memphis, you get them to UCF, and suddenly you realize, hey, this is a really good athlete. He just needed to lift weights and eat. And 2 years later, he's on par with some of the guys that were going to the Miami Hurricanes. And you could win a lot of games with those dudes in a weaker conference, and you're, you know, playing Rice and Air Force every week. So I just, I think that happened with Scott
Rice
Frost. We'll see. I guess time will tell. Reverse this season, plenty of teams lay an egg in their opener and then get it done right later in the year, and then plenty don't ever recover and they stagger through the entire season. It's weird to see the Huskers fall from grace. Just, you know, if you're our age, it's like seeing the Alabama Crimson Tide 10 years from now going 5-7.
Yeah, Which we saw that. I mean, Alabama, half of our life has been average. And obviously with Saban, it's been the best dynasty we've seen. But, yeah, it would be kind of like that. Nebraska won three in the 90s, back-to-back in 94, 95. That 95 team's one of the best college football teams I've ever seen. And they're just trying to find their way. And, you know, going to the Big Ten, I know that that felt like a huge coup, but the reality is that the Big Ten, with their academics, didn't necessarily fit the type of guys that they were going to be recruiting or were recruiting whenever they were a dynasty.
Yeah. Well, very quickly, UCLA, I understand that they are the sleepingest of sleeping giants ever because they've effectively chosen as a school not to take football very seriously. But Chip Kelly takes football pretty seriously. And he is not a guy that's going to go win on the recruiting trail, but he's got an idiosyncratic approach to football, to offense. And I don't want to read too much into blowing out Hawaii because Hawaii has a massive range as a football program. They can be an absolute doormat most years. And then some years they rise up and they're actually pretty challenging, especially when you play them in Hawaii. But UCLA handled them pretty easily. Is there a hint of a pulse out there?
Yes.
Or what are we seeing? What did you see in that game?
They looked really good defensively. And, yeah, Hawaii's Hawaii. Todd Graham is there. He's got his son, Bo, who's the offensive coordinator.
And no.
Yeah, watch out with that. Nepotism is coming. You know what that usually can do. But they looked really good. They looked athletic. They looked big defensively. And with DTR offensively, they've got some good backs. They got Charbonnet from Michigan. They run hard. They started to have a pulse last year. Now, it was the Pac-12, so they played like a game and a half, so you couldn't get too much of a read on it. But I said when we were talking, doing our preview stuff this summer, I said, watch out for UCLA. I don't think they're going to be world beaters, but I think they're going to be better than people think. And with Chip Kelly is one of those guys that was way ahead of his time. Well, everyone's running what Chip Kelly was running when he was the only one running it. So you kind of wonder if that has passed him by, but he's still a pretty good football coach, and they look pretty good.
That offense, the Chip Kelly offense at the college level, when he's got the right players, particularly at quarterback, it's a bear, man. It's a bitch. It's a bitch to game plan against. And they really have an offense that plays simple on their end and looks complex on the other end.
Totally agree. Yeah, so I'm curious to kind of see what they look like in the Pac-12, a very down Pac-12. I think it was easy to say, okay, well, you've got USC, you've got Oregon, you've got Washington. UCLA may make a little bit of noise there, but it was fun to kind of watch them come out and just whip the shit out of Hawaii.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, we talked about recruiting bases. Hey, as many complications are that are happening in California with sports and the future of sports, when you get out of the latte sipping crowd, right, which dominates the sort of cultural perception and cultural influence of California, there's a lot of gritty people that play football still, and they still love the sport. And there's still big empires, and you saw that with Mater Dei, right? They came in and played, I believe, Duncanville.
Yeah, they killed them.
Kicked the shit out of them, right? And, you know, that still exists. There's still that in California. And per year, they're going to turn out as many Division I recruits as the state of Texas. And so to be UCLA in the state of California, where you don't really have any other major programs other than USC who take football seriously, Cal somewhat. I like Justin Wilcox, but he's got huge headwinds against him. I mean, you're talking after that, you're talking about Fresno State, right?
Yeah.
I mean, now, you have some out-of-state interlopers like Oregon, who's just feasts in California, right? You've got Stanford for a narrow academic profile of athlete, but there is plenty of opportunity for UCLA to go out and get the players that they want if they can just show a pulse with football. So, anyway, a program to watch. They've been in a deep sleep, but, yeah, maybe keep a little eye on the Bruins.
Keep an eye on them, but it gets back to what you said about taking it seriously. Real estate obviously is really expensive around there, but I was talking with a UCLA football player, and he said when he got there as a freshman, and he was a good player, so this is not like some walk-on or someone they just didn't give a shit about, and he was in a dorm room that wasn't that big with two other guys. It was three to a room.
Like, wow.
When I heard that, I just thought, he said once they get over that, then they're going to be able to get a lot of guys in there, but that gets around pretty quickly, and people are thinking, I'm not doing that.
and the capital expenditure for something like that, right, if it's not been addressed, that's hard to float by some of the academics that are running the show at UCLA, right? Because even though they're not paying for it, the school's not paying for it, right? It's all going to be donor money. But they still like, well, it looks bad. It looks unseemly. And it's like, all right, whatever. So, yeah, they just have to decide they want to take it seriously. You want to hear some California nonsense?
Please.
So my son is going to play baseball.
That's great.
And it's his favorite sport. Anyway, I'm going to move past that.
Smart kid.
Right now, you, Randy Boone, Austin Wood, all chuckling, mocking me because of the shit I talk about baseball. Oh, but
it's so great. And just the fact that this is coming back.
I know. But he is playing for the Orioles. That's his team. And he played for the Angels last time. And they, we got the intro email. And the woman coordinating it was like, we'll be practicing here. It will be socially distant. I'm like, well, baseball's a socially distant game anyway, lady. She was talking about the distances the players are going to stand from each other. And I'm like, God. Yeah, that's the alignment of a baseball field.
Right. We're going to put the shortstop here and the third baseman here. Yeah, we get that.
We will have the left fielder at least 50 yards from the third baseman. It's like, yeah, yep, that's correct. So in any event, the email also included reasons that they would cancel practice to watch out for. One of them is if the air quality index goes over 100. And two is if the temperature is over 90 degrees.
What? 90 degrees? I would say I played 90% of the baseball games I played in my life over 90 degrees.
The whole point of baseball is that you can play it at 90 degrees. I mean, God help you. I mean, you and I are guys who went through Texas high school football two-a-days back when just when coaches were getting the memo on that water won't waterlog you and slow you down, right? And that water breaks were not only encouraged but possibly mandatory, right?
Water breaks were a gift to us if you played well.
Yeah, water breaks were perceived as like a reward if you completed the practice period or the drill session like correctly. If not, it was denied. And whoever got cramps and just keeled over, that was tough shit. You could go lay on the truck and the trainers would put ice bags on you.
Pretty much. I mean, look, and Paul and I are not trying to say that's the way it should be, but that's the way it was.
Yeah, it's just the way it was. It's probably somewhere between what we experienced and what my son experienced is the correct answer. But
right.
Canceling practice because it's 90 degrees.
Everyone gets a trophy. Everyone
gets a trophy, folks. Now you know the reason the podcast is called what it is.
Each generation gets softer and softer. I mean, the generation above us thought we were soft, and compared to them, I guess we were. But looking at it now, I'm just thinking, what are we raising here?
Well, there's an old saying that I've heard, which I think goes something like this. Hard times create hard men. Hard men create soft times. Soft times create soft men. Hmm. And soft men create hard times.
Man.
And the circle goes on in perpetuity.
Right.
All right.
I hope this Texas team isn't soft.
No, let's talk about it. Do we want to talk about the Ragin' Cajuns first, or do we want to talk about Hudson Card first?
Let's get into Hudson Card first, because he has been named the starter, like you said. I don't think it's too much of a surprise. Now you just have Casey Thompson portal watch, and hopefully that won't be the case. But I even heard last week that Charles Wright was getting some work at, or splitting some second team reps with Casey Thompson.
So I remember handicapping a little earlier before the season, and we got more information, right? You were sort of thinking maybe they'd go Casey Thompson early just to prevent the transfer.
Yep.
Now it looks like Sark's all in.
He's all in. And by the way, if there was enough separation, you shouldn't do that. I just kind of thought they may do that if it was really close. But Hudson Card won this thing. I think it's been pretty obvious, so – roll with Hudson Card and hope that Casey Thompson stays there and you've got two really good quarterbacks and you don't have to worry about Charles Wright as a true freshman being a backup. But we did know that Hudson Card just has more arm talent. And I think I'm pretty sure that I said that on that podcast, even though I thought KC would, and this was months ago, would get the initial nod. If there's that much separation, go with the better guy.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think the thing that devalued KC, we've talked about this briefly, if you're going to be the sell is like, I'm the fourth year experienced quarterback. I'm going to manage the game. I'm going to help you get through the early part of the season, right?
Got to take care of the football.
Got to take care of the football. You destroy your whole sell to the staff. And then ultimately the staff just has to go with the upside guy. That's just how it's going to be. So, you know, it makes sense to me. I pray Casey Thompson will keep a cool head and understand he is one play from going in there and being the starting quarterback at the University of Texas. And you can't account for the people that are in these guys' ears, but I hope someone with some common sense is talking to them.
Also, I agree with that. Also, we don't know what Hudson Card's going to be like under the bright lights.
No doubt. I mean, he could fold, and we have a tough first half against Louisiana, and Casey Thompson trots out there to start the third quarter.
Yeah, and tears it up, and Casey Thompson's your starter. Yeah, I would. Now, if you get 2 or 3 weeks in and Texas is 3-0 and Hudson Card's tearing it up, then maybe you have that discussion. But I wouldn't do anything right now.
Yeah, I mean, and if he transferred, just looking at it practically, it's too late. Like, there's no real ability for him to go somewhere and have an impact. So unless he wants to go to a, you know, an SFA-type program, right? I just don't see it. So, like, stick it out. Let the season unfold and you know, let the chips fall where they may.
What have you heard about Hudson Card? What is he doing really well?
I think what he does well is that he has a really good arm and he's pretty accurate and he's good at RPOs. I've heard he struggles with taking sacks.
He holds
the ball too long.
Yeah, holding on to the ball too long. I've heard that too. And he is the thing about him is, you know, he's really athletic. He played receiver for a little while at Lake Travis. And it does seem like, I mean, especially if there's off-schedule stuff, and I think there's going to be off-schedule plays because this is not Alabama's offensive line, I've got no problem with him taking off.
Hold on, Kevin. He's deceptively athletic.
Oh, no, he's not. He's just athletic.
Well, no. He is apparently athletic. It is apparent, but you're supposed to affix the word deceptively or deceivingly anytime you're talking about a white player being athletic.
Yep, we do that with especially any white safety, anyone who's playing a position like that, usually where you need fast twitch. You know, he's surprisingly athletic. It's like, all right.
Well, they do that white on the other side with like Byron Leftwich.
Yeah,
who I could crush in a 40-yard dash, right? And they're like, well, he's a dual threat. I'm like, no, he's not.
Right.
He's the most pocket passer that's ever been born. He's more of a pocket passer than Peyton Manning. He wins games because he's got a great head on his shoulders and he sees the game and he'll take a hit right on the bottom of his chin just to get the ball out at the right time.
Deceptively smart. Yeah, Stephen A. Smith. Remember Stephen A. Smith, who obviously didn't watch any college football, was talking about Dwayne Haskins and said, yeah, he's really athletic. He can really go. It's like, no,
it's like,
no.
No, he's not.
No, he's not. You obviously have not watched one play.
It's so great. The built-in assumptions people have. You got to love it. But all right. Well, look, Hudson Card is your starter. I think, are there any other surprises at starting positions that we know about? Has Bijan Robinson been benched?
He is done.
He's done.
It's going to be Keelan the whole time. No, so maybe B.J. Foster actually winning that job. It sounds like he won that job. And I'm curious just how much improvement they saw from him, but also psychologically, were they just trying to motivate him? Because it felt like he was running two for a long time in the spring, and you just thought, great, another five-star that I was hoping this coaching staff could see something in him, and maybe he was going to improve and also work with the scheme. But, yeah, it sounds like it's going to be Schooler and then BJ. And then we've talked about the nickel and dime. That's going to be rotated and probably be different guys depending on who they're playing. But good news about Anthony Cook, another five-star who apparently has played pretty well.
Yeah, I tell you what, he came out of nowhere. And I mean, of course, we all know Anthony Cook. But, boy, he stuck around. Talk about a portal guy, right? He was almost gone twice.
Yeah, he almost quit.
He almost quit. And he's back, and he got new eyes, new coaching staff, and they love him. They love Anthony Cook. So fascinating. I think the Texas defensive back group, if they can come together, you know, they might be a better group than people think or expect. And if we can get some of that talent squeezed out and deployed correctly. You know, one thing, when we go to three wide receiver sets, do you think the freshman Xavier Worthy is going to be third wide receiver?
Yes.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, look, I just – who's going to be healthy? Because obviously O'Meary's had some issues with that knee. Jordan Whittington, they said it's not that big of a deal, but we always worry about him and the hamstring. So if everyone was healthy, I still would have concern about the receivers. But, yeah, I think Xavier Worthy is going to be out there. I just hope that he doesn't get jammed, because you do know Louisiana, they return both cornerbacks, Mekhi Garner, and then I forgot who the other kid is. But they return – what, 10 starters on defense, and they've got some veteran guys. They will jam and press Texas. That was a big issue for this team last year, big issue for a guy like Josh Moore, who's light, and Xavier Worthy is kind of another version of that. But he can go. There's no doubt about that. I just hope he can get open and get off press coverage.
Yeah, that other press corner for Louisiana is Eric Guerrer.
Yes.
And he's about 5'9", 175. Mekhi Garner, that you mentioned, he's over 210.
Yeah.
He is a giant corner.
6'2". He's got long arms.
Yep. All about press and getting his work done early. Obviously, we want to get him isolated one-on-one, but Louisiana knows that, and they do a good job protecting. I can tell you, and I obviously covered them quite extensively in my Thinking Texas Football preview. I really did a deep dive on those guys. Their secondary – plenty of Big 12 teams would trade out their secondary for Louisiana's. Promise you that. They are legit. They're good players. They really performed well last year, and they return everyone. And people forget they humiliated Iowa State in terms of their coverage on Iowa State's receivers. And they made Brock Purdy look very ordinary and really held down the Cyclones. And, you know, of course, that's why they won by 17 points in Ames. So if Texas wants to avoid that, the receivers have got to show up. And Steve Sarkisian, I think he's aware, and I think he's going to scheme some stuff up. I don't think he's just going to roll our receivers out there and say win.
Zion Hill, Taylen Humphrey, Andre Jones, their front. Which one of those guys scares you the most? Hill's pretty damn good player, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Humphrey is like, I think, their big boy.
He's huge.
He's like their run stopper, but yep. I don't – The big issue with Louisiana's defensive line is they don't get good pressure. They don't get any pressure. So that's a good thing. So if they do get pressure on Texas Saturday, it's going to be blown assignments. And that's what we obviously want to avoid. But Louisiana has to dial up pressure if they want pressure. So that's something to look for. And if we do our good pre-scouting, right, that's supposed to be the sell on Sarkisian, right? This isn't Tom Herman roll out the ball. We're just going to run our offense. We're going to do what we do. Steve Sarkisian should be scouting these guys and knowing they don't get a great pass rush without dialing up a blitz. And they've got a young defensive coordinator, really young guy, who's pretty innovative. And what his basic theory is, which is kind of correct, hey, I'll give up the running game, but I'm not going to let you throw the ball. And that's how they deploy their defense. Now, that could run into some problems when you've got Bijan Robinson on the field.
Right.
Because what he thinks are some of those 6- and 7-, 8-yard manageable runs could turn into 45, 50, 60-yard runs.
Do you think we – offensively, what do you think you see from Texas? I'm guessing we see a lot more 12 personnel in Texas, obviously just trying to run the football with Bijan. But what do you expect to see? How is this going to look?
They're going to try to throw the football. I think they're going to come out in 12. Depends on the health of Jared Wiley. I think he was knocked down by a virus or something. Not COVID-related, but man, I think we're going to see some 12 personnel. I think they're going to do a lot of running the ball and a lot of RPO and a lot of play action, and it's going to be single read type stuff that Sarkisian's going to try to diagram, right? And maybe try to take a little bit of the decision-making out of the hands of the quarterback and the receiver. Maybe a little bit more of operating the offense from the sideline with a joystick, maybe early, maybe so. Maybe that's what we'll see. And then I think he'll work in more decisional algorithmic type stuff later as the year progresses.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty simple early on. And obviously you try and rely on five and give Hudson Card easy reads, like you said. But I just want to see what these receivers look like. And then also the offensive line, has it taken that next step? How much did Kyle Flood, was he able to improve some of these guys because the offensive line has just been it's been bad for 10 years and maybe even a little bit longer than that. So Christian Jones at left tackle, just how good do these guys look?
We're going to find out. I mean, we can conjecture.
I have no idea.
Go ahead.
No, I was saying I have no idea. I'm with you. I mean, we can sit here and guess, but until really with the secondary receivers and the offensive line, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah. Here's a guess that I'll throw out, and maybe based on like looking at how things are going to stack up and where Sark wants to deliver the ball and help Hudson Card with some progressions. I think the tight ends, specifically Cade Brewer, but the tight ends as a unit, and the running backs as a unit, specifically Bijan, but also Keelan and Roshan, I think they're going to combine to catch about 10 balls on Saturday.
You know what? I'm absolutely with you. Rod and I have talked about it. We think the tight ends are gonna lead with the backs, but it could be the tight ends. They're going to lead the team in receptions early on. That's where you're going to see a lot of that 12 personnel. I think they're going to rely heavily on throwing to the backs and the tight ends. And hopefully Wiley will be healthy, because I think Wiley as a receiving threat is the guy who could probably scare someone the most.
You know, it's funny. He's publicly perceived as the best blocker, but if you actually watch him, he's actually a really dangerous receiver over the middle and struggles as a blocker.
Yeah. Who thinks he's – I mean, apparently he's gotten better at blocking, but we've talked about it even in the spring game where he got blown up. Was that Jaron Thompson? No, I mean, that's where he's got to make the improvement.
Yeah, I think it's a size thing. I think someone sees 6'7", 250-plus, and you see the – and he's imposing, and you think that he's a great blocker. And, you know, the truth is he's a much better, potentially dynamic receiver. When he's on the move, when he's, like, on the run and he gets a clean release up the center of the field – he's a load, man, and he's an easy target. He's got long arms, and I think he had a couple of those late release plays last year where I was like, holy shit, Jared Wiley, like that looked like a real receiver there. So I'm interested to see more of that. And then I think a trimmed up Cade Brewer is going to be Hudson Card's security blanket early.
Yeah, we saw him. He blocked pretty well. I mean, we talked about that. You can actually lose some weight and get to your spot and your point a little bit quicker. So I think he's going to be very reliable. But, yeah, we saw that from Wiley a couple years ago. I mean, we didn't see a lot, but if you've watched enough football, I thought there's a lot there. There's a lot there to like. He's just got to become a better blocker. So hopefully he's made that transition. But the backs are going to get a ton of balls.
I think you're exactly right. And we talked about security blankets and performance. I know someone who's going to perform for our listeners, Kevin.
Gabe
Winslow, he's the man. Hey, all of you who are past customers listening to this, you should have already received your autographed copy of Thinking Texas Football, courtesy of Gabe Winslow and yours truly. That's just a little way of saying thank you for doing business with Gabe and supporting us. But we have some more exciting things we want to offer to our listeners.
Yeah.
Aside from getting phenomenal service, on-time closing, and an incredibly low interest rate, what we're going to do is anyone who puts in an application or has ever had so much as a conversation with Gabe about getting a mortgage, about getting a loan, we're going to put you in a drawing. And it's going to be to win a football game experience with me and Gabe. I'm going to fly in for a game. Right now, we're looking at Oklahoma State in the early October. We're going to get 4 tickets. You and a buddy can join us, you and your kid, whatever you want to do. We're going to go grab lunch. We're going to go see the game. We're going to have a great time. Watch the horns roll. Kevin, you are invited, but you're going to be doing radio.
I'm going to be busy. I may try and sneak out and hang out with you guys, but this is really cool. This will be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And then secondarily, anyone who does a loan with Gabe this year, you get a 30-minute phone conversation with me. Now, you could view that as a benefit or you could view it as punishment. I understand either perspective.
Hey, what if they get 10 minutes in and they just had enough? Can they hang up?
If they get 10 minutes in and they've had enough, they can hang up and we'll probably, like, you know, help them get a point lower on their loan or something. No, we can't do that. But, if you want to talk to me, I'm happy to talk to you. We'll shoot the bull. We can talk Texas. We can talk about whatever you want. And maybe I can give you a couple of little insidery things, assuming that you'll swear not to go post it on the boards and, and you know, reveal all the sources and all that good stuff. So anyway, there's going to be a great drawing. You're going to get a copy. A bunch of you have already gotten copies of Thinking Texas Football. If you've already done a loan with Gabe and you do want one and you didn't respond to his invitation where those copies were distributed, reach out to Gabe at 832-557-1095 or go to mortgagesbygabe.com. That's 832-557-1095. Get your copy of Thinking Texas Football. Get in on the drawing for the game experience. And then also, if you want, we can have a little chat once you do a loan, and you and I can and shoot the bull. And, you know, nothing's off limits. You can ask any question you want.
Dude, I love it. I mean, Gabe just continues to help us out. That's going to be pretty cool. I think people are really going to enjoy that, just to be able to bullshit with you. And I do that weekly, and I can tell them it's going to be a lot of fun. I think we're just excited that football season is here. Hey, let's go over this offensive line for the Ragin' Cajuns. They returned 10 starters on offense, including the entire offensive line. Max Mitchell, the right tackle, 6'6", 300. He was second-team all-conference, SBC. And then Osiris Torrance is the right guard. The right side of that line is pretty damn good, and really they return everyone.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that I would look to, so that offensive line is very cohesive. They're deeply experienced, as you said. Max Mitchell, my understanding is he's a legitimate sort of end-of-round NFL prospect.
Yeah.
So he's a good football player.
Yep.
And then they have that level of experience with the offense, which is huge, right? Particularly in an opener. Here's the weakness, and I think an interesting thing that Pete Kwiatkowski is going to identify, if he hasn't already identified, I think he'll identify it in the game. Their center, Shane Vallot, or Vallot, probably Vallot if he's from California, from Louisiana.
Yep.
If he's from California, he's not going to play in the game because the temperature is going to get over 90 degrees, Kevin.
Vallot
goes 270 pounds. Is that going to hold up against Keiondre Coburn or Tavondre Sweat inside?
I don't think it will, and he's listed at 6 feet, so that means he's 5'10 and a half.
Yeah, I mean, every time you see a football program, high school or college level, and a guy's listed at 6 feet, I know that I was going to tower over him, and I'm just over 6 feet. I'm 6'1 and a little change, and I knew that dude would be looking up at my chin.
Yeah, no, I looked at that too, and he's 270 around there. He's a good football player, but that's where Sweat and Coburn and those guys, the zeros, could really, really do some damage. Question for those guys is just how much more in shape are they, and where's the endurance, and can they? Because I was clearing out my DVR and was going over some old Texas games, and it reminded me before, of course, I deleted them. I had to watch them again. And I'm telling you, man, he played at an All-American level early on in a series, and that went downhill quickly. The center just had to get a couple plays in just to tire him out, and then it was just a different guy. So I know both those guys wanted to drop weight. They wanted to get in better shape. Can they play at a high level for more than one play or two plays in a series?
I think they can, because the one thing about this defensive line is there's depth, and they are going to throw them at the opposing offensive line in bunches. They're going to come at them in waves. I think it's helpful that it's going to be hot. And your point about Coburn is hilarious. It's so true, Kevin. You had to weather the Coburn storm.
You really did.
At the beginning of any drive.
I mean, that first play, I'm not being hyperbolic. I'm not being fanboy. He was one of the best defensive linemen, and I watched, like you, a ton of college football. But, man, it went down. That storm went downhill quickly.
The storm was a light drizzle by play four.
Yes.
And basically, you just had to hold up. Now, conversely, if you're a center and there's a TV timeout, you're like, oh, shit.
I know. Please, like, no.
Like, Keiondre's going to regenerate. He's going to repower for one more play, and I'm going to get my ass beat. I just need to hold up and, like, not get completely ragdolled. Because if we can get two more plays in, and God help us if we're doing on the positive side, God will help us if we're doing hurry up, right? Then I can just, I can deal with Keiondre. He's going to lean on me a little bit until he gets his little second wind. But Keiondre has trimmed down. I think he's gotten more effective. We have more effective depth inside. And look, there's a lot of people in the program who think Sweat is actually the more talented player 2-3 years from now than Keiondre.
Right.
So I think they're going to run him in bunches. You got Moro Ojomo. You got Byron Murphy. You got Alfred Collins, who could play inside, outside. You've got all these different options who can really play. And I think the coaches are going to tell these guys, I mean, Bo Davis is going to say, I'm giving you 35 snaps. You will play like a freaking maniac. Don't save anything, because the minute you feel spent, a dude's going to come in and tap you on the shoulder, and you can rest on the sideline until the next series.
I think you're right. So PFF, Pro Football Focus, came out with their top 100 draft-eligible guys in college football heading into the year. There were two Longhorns on there. You want to guess who they were?
Overshown?
Overshown was the first one. I forgot where he was, like maybe in the 70s. And then in the 90s, it was T'Vondre Sweat.
Yep, I see it.
And I think they were looking at body and looking at size and kind of what he can do. He's obviously tried to drop some weight too. So both those guys could be really nasty, especially if they can stay on the field at a high level longer. But I'm excited about Alfred Collins. I mean, this defensive line is loaded. It's really how do you play with the chess pieces?
Yeah, I think that's correct. And one thing Pete Witkowski has shown you at his time, certainly at Washington, he knows how to deploy the chess pieces, and he can do it in often contrarian ways that sort of surprise you. Mm-hmm. And you'll realize in retrospect, man, that was a really good game plan. That negated that one thing that offense does really well. It made them play left-handed. They got uncomfortable. And as a consequence, you know, the Washington Huskies got a couple of cheap turnovers off of it. And, you know, I'm all for that. Like, hey man, let's coach them up. It's legal. You don't just have to roll the football out.
Right. And we've been rolling it out for way too long. No, Kwiatkowski's the real deal. I think people are going to be impressed how he uses those chess pieces, and he did that at Washington. Look, he had Greg Gaines, Vita Vea. He had some talented defensive lines. I don't think he had this many dudes, though, and I think he's going to play around with that. Speaking of playing left-handed, what are your thoughts on Levi Lewis, the senior quarterback?
You know what? Levi Lewis, I've been reading a lot of comments of people saying like, oh, Louisiana's going to come in. They're going to be cowed by this massive crowd. They've never seen something like that before. You know, maybe that's true. They've certainly never seen 100,000 plus in the stands. And I'm sure the crowd will be rocking because of the new end zone work and all that stuff. But this is a deeply experienced football team. I just don't see them being rocked by any of that. And Levi Lewis, to your point, he's 21-4 as a starter for them. He came back. He got his COVID-free pass. He's not an NFL prospect, so he's just going to enjoy another year of college. He's been there and done that. This guy's played a lot of football. He's not going to be scared. Like, I think anyone who thinks that is wrong. He's a gamer. I sort of compared him to Russell Wilson without the arm,
yeah.
Meaning he's very good at extending plays. He's about 5'10", 190. He's nifty. He's not super fast, but he's an effective runner. What he lacks is arm.
Oh,
and
man.
So he,
and it looks ugly.
It looks ugly. He scrambles around and he runs around back there and he buys time and he flips it up there and it hangs in the air forever. And can you get away with that against Louisiana Monroe? Yeah, you can. Is Texas going to punish that? Damn, I hope so.
Especially with so many eyes on the quarterback. I think you're going to see different schemes. Josh Thompson ran into him, a month or two ago. We were doing a remote, and he said, you know, we're going to have our eyes on the quarterback a lot more. I think that's going to help out all those guys. It's really going to help out DeShawn Jameson.
How's Josh looking?
Josh looked great. Super sharp kid, just a really, really, really good young man. But physically he looked really good. You could also just tell he was really confident. I mean, these guys feel a hell of a lot more confident in the scheme they're playing, and I think they also know they've got a lot to prove. He's aware of that, but he said they looked really good, and physically he looked really good.
Coming in, are you more confident on Saturday in our offense or our defense?
Defense.
Why?
And it's funny because, I mean, because the questions I have, I talk about receiver, offensive line, and secondary. Well, okay, so there's only one on defense there. I think the linebackers are going to be pretty good, and we're not going to see a ton of them. You're going to see a lot of two linebacker schemes, and I think Brockemeyer will complement Overshown really well. I think Overshown's going to have a big year. But because those guys that are returning in the secondary, like I said, I need to believe it, or I need to see it to believe it. But I think with that scheme, eyes on the quarterback, and there's enough talent there that I think the defense is going to be ahead of the offense early. What about you?
Yeah, I feel similarly. So I would think success for the offense It depends on game situation and all sorts of stuff, right? But if you want to assign a point value, we want the offense to score 31 plus, right?
Yes. Yes.
And defensively, do you see a way, short of like turnovers or cheap special teams touchdowns, do you see a way that Louisiana scores more than 14 to 17 offensive points?
Yeah, I can see them. I can see them putting up 21 to 24. I don't see them putting 30 plus up unless they do get some special teams. Which, look, I mean, part of that 31-14 win against Iowa State was special teams. Their defense played really well, but their special teams are pretty damn good. Chris Smith, who will be most likely the starting running back, is a real dynamic, good kick returner. So you take out some of the hidden yardage and hidden points like that, 21-24 would be the most I see their offense scoring.
Yeah, that's fair.
And it's also, how many short fields are there, off of turnovers and shit like that?
That's it. I mean, you can see a really, we've seen Texas defenses play their asses off, and there's still 35 points on the board at the end of the day, and it's not their fault, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember the Apple turnover game against Kansas State?
Oh yeah. Yes, I do.
Major a friend of Kevin's. That's not meant as a criticism, but he had 6 turnovers in the game.
Oh man, I remember talking to him about that, and
he got hit so hard in that game, Kevin.
Yeah, he did. He was like, I don't think you realize just how much I got bruised and beat up, and it definitely, psychologically, that can mess with you. And that's one thing I think we're really going to like about this Kwiatkowski defense. It is attacking. It is aggressive. And psychologically, we saw that at Washington a lot. They did get into the heads of quarterbacks. Quarterbacks looked a little bit different in that third quarter than they did to start the game.
The philosophy of our defense is attacking, Kevin.
It's the only one. And by the way, our strength and conditioning coach is the next Joseph Pilates.
Well, I did an entire solo podcast that you may have deleted.
No, you did a good job. I was impressed, and I appreciate it.
So I tackled that very question for about an hour and stipulated I don't know exactly what we're doing with Torrey Becton, but there are some things to watch out for, and there are some very appealing-sounding cliches spouted by strength and conditioning coaches meant to appeal to athletes and to fans. And a lot of those cliches don't actually mean anything. So watch out for that, because it's coach speak on steroids, no pun intended.
Right. And look, we were sold to Gary Darnell that his defense was attacking, and it was one of the most passive, ridiculous defenses ever. And it is cliche, but it's also true with Kwiatkowski. There's an attacking, aggressive feel to it.
It is true most of the time, but I tell you, man, I've mentioned this before, but he won so many points with me in that press conference when they were like, why did you have so much success against the air raid of Mike Leach? And he was like, we just drop 8 and we tackle well and we wait for them to make a mistake.
Right. Look, you're going to see a lot of different things. And they did do that against Leach in that offense. So this will be fun. It's going to be a multiple varied look defensively, and it's really going to be game to game. And that gets back to your point about, hey, we just don't need to roll it out there. We can also really scheme against an opponent and look different week to week in terms of kind of what we're doing. They've got a couple big receivers, including a TCU transfer. John Stevens, who's like 6'5". Anything in terms of getting back to kind of the Texas secondary that you'd be worried about with their receivers?
No, I think they'll get big plays off of busts or guys not playing the ball well correctly in the air. I don't think it's going to be they're just crushing us on the outside and like shaking guys and getting wide open. I don't think that's going to happen unless there's a bust.
So what happens in this game?
I'm hoping for a Texas win, and I'll take any win, survive in advance. I really feel that way, and I understand people are like, oh, come on, man, be confident, 42-10. Look, if anyone gets blown out in this game, it's going to be them, but I don't think that's a high likelihood. I think this is too experienced a team. I think it's an opener. I think Texas has some things to shake off, some nerves to work out, and a new scheme and a bunch of new stuff to work out, and I'll take a win. And how you play in an opener is not predictive of how good your football team is. It just is not.
No. No, no, it's not. And it's talk about cliche. When do you see the most improvement with a football team, Paul?
Between game one and game two, Kevin?
Yeah, I've
heard that before.
Oh God, we hear that a lot, and there is some truth to that. I think you're going to see more with this team the first month compared to the next couple months.
We just want to see a team get coached up and grow, don't we?
That's it. Yes. I want to see a team that at least it feels like it's even in terms of being coached up compared to the other team, and if that's the case. Texas still has a lot of talent, and I'm with you. 28-27. I don't care how they do it. I do think Texas will win this game. Surprise the line. The line's been like at 10-11. I mean, it's double digits, and for a team that's 10-1 and is returning as many veteran guys as Louisiana and does have that Iowa State win on their belt, then I'm surprised. I would think that'd be more like around 6, maybe a touchdown.
Well, you know, what's crazy is that line opened up at minus 14 a couple of months ago. I don't know if that was actionable. I don't know if you could actually put 10 grand on that.
You
right?
could.
But
on some.
It's been bet down to about 8 or 7.5.
Okay. I didn't realize it had come down that far.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you what, I'm all Texas all the time. I would have bet Louisiana plus 14.
I was telling people when that came out, it was like, jump on that right now because that line's going to have to go down. And you never know. They're just trying to get Texas action, and that could have been the case. But maybe, look, Vegas knows a lot. Maybe they know something with this matchup. And I think a lot of it just gets back to faith in Sark and Kwiatkowski that they know there's talent at Texas, and it just hadn't been coached up.
Hey, very quickly, because we're coming to our hour. It all goes quickly
it does.
When we're excited.
Flies by. You know what? That 30-minute phone call may go quickly for these people.
Yeah, that's the hope. In a good way. Let's flip the battlefield a little bit. All right. We know Texas. We know how we want to attack them. Now you're Coach Billy Napier. You're the DC. You're the OC. How do you want to attack Texas on defense?
Defensively, I press and jam. I mean, until Texas receivers prove that they can get off that, then I'm going to use my corners and jam the hell out of them, try and reroute them, try and get them out of rhythm. And then defensively, you're going to have to find ways to dial up some pressure, but also take advantage of a kid that's never started a college football game before. See if you can't try and trick him and turn him over a little bit. I think those are the ways to do it. And then you just hold on for dear life with Bijan.
I think that's right. I think they got to try to scheme up some success on first down if we're just going to telegraph the running game. And I just think they need to run a lot of shifts. You've got an experienced defense. You have a very experienced secondary. I think they need to give Texas look after look after look. And, you know, to the point of running junk defenses.
Right. And twists and stunts, too. Twists and stunts and press coverage. See if they've improved on that.
I don't think they want to attack the Texas athletes because the Texas players are better football players on average. They need to attack the Texas inexperience.
Mm-hmm.
What about the other side? If you're Louisiana on offense, what's your game plan facing the Longhorn defense that's pretty damn talented and, on a physical spectrum, they're better, more imposing athletes across the board than your offense?
Right. You try and obviously sustain drives. This is not going to be quick drives. You try and not eat up the clock, but really keep your defense off the field. And then I would test the space cadets in the Texas secondary, which they have been space cadets. See if they can play the ball because they haven't the last couple of years.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you go back to Maryland, and by the way, throw out Maryland. I mean, the useful thing of Maryland is it shows what can happen in an opener. The not useful part of Maryland is Steve Sarkisian wasn't the coach.
Right.
I mean, you know, and a lot of people are doing that sort of game, but it's not relevant as it directly relates to Texas. It doesn't matter that those guys were wearing Texas uniforms. None of those players were there. None of these coaches were there. What it is useful is to show how you can is when you have the superior football team, right, athlete by athlete, it's how you can get your ass beat just because you're not clear on your assignments and the other team does things you weren't expecting. And, you know, Maryland really had success running some stupid jet sweeps.
Yeah.
And then throwing deep.
Well, they also realized where Malcolm Roach was lined up and thought, well, this is an advantage.
Tyrone Pigrum or Pigrome, was that the quarterback's name?
Yes.
So anyway, the point is, I think Louisiana, I think their goal on offense is going to be steady Eddie, like you said, Kevin. I think they're going to try to convert. I think they're going to try to hold the ball. I think if they can get a big play, they'll happily take it. But I think their goal is to not turn it over. And I think they want to try to put the pressure on the Texas offense to perform in front of a big crowd.
I think that's it. I think that's it. I'm excited about it, man. Should be fun. We'll be back next week to obviously recap that and then get ready for those Hogs.
Absolutely. And if you want someone who will perform for you, and she's not a Hog.
Hey, it's your sister, so just
that's right.
I'll let you say that.
Her name is Laura Baker. She is a terrific realtor for the outstanding Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. They are an elite group in Austin, Texas, and she is phenomenal both as a buyer's agent but also a listing agent. Look, if you're in the market considering selling your home, things have settled down a little bit, and you really are thinking about taking advantage of a toppy Austin market, then you need to run some comps, and you need someone who's going to present a plan for your home to optimize what you can get for it and get a speedy sell. That's Laura Baker. Reach her at 512-784-0505. That's 512-784-0505.
All right, y'all. Hook 'em. Talk to you next week.